Ever get that feeling, you know, like when you're really trying to dig into something important, something complex, like legal cases? It can be tough to sort through all the details, right?
Absolutely.
So today we're gonna take a deep dive into Jones versus Marva Theaters, specifically for you. It's a really kind of a pivotal case in civil rights law. You know, you don't have to read all the dense legal stuff yourself because we're gonna break it all down for you.
Yeah, we're zeroing in on this case from 1960 in Frederick, Maryland. It all started with a challenge to the segregation policies at the City Opera House.
Right.
But here's the thing, and this is what makes it so interesting. The Opera House was actually owned by the city, but it was leased out to a private company, Marva Theaters. And guess what? They were the ones enforcing the segregation.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that brings up a really, really important question, and this is something we're going to untangle today. How does the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause apply in a situation like this?
Right.
When you have a publicly owned space, but it's being run by a private entity that's discriminating,
Right.
this gets right to the heart of the state action doctrine, a concept, by the way, that is super important to get your head around.
And for this deep dive, the materials you shared are incredibly helpful. We've got excerpts from some podcast guidelines
Love.
that really lay out a framework for how we should approach this conversation. And we have both a detailed and a standard case brief for Jones versus Marva Theaters. So our goal today is to pull out the most important insights from these documents so you can really grasp the fundamental legal principles at play here.
Right. Okay. So let's get into the nitty-gritty. We know that the city of Frederick owned this city opera house. And here's an interesting detail. It wasn't just some freestanding building. It was part of the city hall complex.
That's right.
They were really integrated there. And this setup wasn't something new, was it?
No, not at all. They'd been leasing the Opera House to various private theater operators since all the way back in 1927.
Okay.
Then in 1950, Marva Theaters took over the lease. Now, here's where it gets really interesting, I think, especially for our listeners.
Okay.
Marva enforced this really strict segregation policy. You know, African Americans, they were only allowed to sit in the back balcony. And they even had separate restrooms that were, get this, specifically labeled colored. I mean, you know, this wasn't some subtle discrimination. It was right there in your face.
Oh, wow. So this wasn't just, you know, a new discriminatory policy they just suddenly slapped onto this public land.
No.
It had been going on for a while.
This was the norm. Yeah.
It's just kind of unbelievable to think that, you know, we're talking 1960 here,
Right.
and the city owned this building, this place, you know, essentially a public space. But they claimed that because of this lease agreement, they couldn't tell Marva what to do. They couldn't tell them to stop discriminating.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a huge loophole to me,
Great.
doesn't
Yeah, I mean,
it?
you could drive a truck through that.
Yeah.
Okay. So what was Marva's excuse?
Mm.
I mean, this couldn't have been a secret in the community, right?
Oh, it was definitely not a secret. In fact, the president of Marva Theaters, he openly admitted, like he said it publicly, that segregation was, quote unquote, the only way to run the theater profitably.
Wow.
I think this really highlights for our listeners, you know, the economic motivations behind segregation and also just, you know, the deep-seated prejudices that were prevalent at the time.
That's crazy. So let me just make sure I'm following this correctly.
Well,
So the big legal question here was whether Marva's actions, even though they were a private company, could actually be considered state action under the 14th Amendment.
exactly.
Is that right?
Yeah,
Okay.
you nailed it. And the plaintiffs, they were three African American scientists.
Liar.
They really strategically pointed to a similar case, Dawson versus Baltimore.
Okay.
That had happened earlier, and our listeners might find this case interesting to look up too. But in Dawson, the courts had ruled that even when public parks were leased to private companies, they still couldn't operate on a segregated basis.
Interesting.
So the real issue here boiled down to this: does leasing public property to a private entity automatically let the government off the hook? Does it absolve them of their constitutional responsibility to prevent discrimination?
That's the core issue right there. And
Exactly.
what did the court say? I'm guessing they didn't buy that argument, did they?
No, they did not. They were pretty clear about that. They said that the Opera House couldn't be considered just some random piece of surplus property.
Okay.
This was a public space, a vital part of the city's operations. Remember, it was actually housed within City Hall. And the lease agreement, this was a key point for the court. The fact that it specifically included provisions for colored facilities that strongly suggested that the city, at the very least, was implicitly acknowledging, maybe even supporting, segregation.
Wow. Okay.
So the court's argument was this constitutes state action, even if it's Marva, a private company, handling the day-to-day operations.
So the court really saw through this attempt to kind of use the lease as a shield, you know, to hide behind and say, oh, that's not our fault. It's their policy.
Right. Exactly.
So how did they differentiate the Opera House from a business that's just, you know, a totally private business that happens to be within the city limits?
Yeah, that's a really important distinction. The court laid out three main factors.
Okay.
First, government ownership was crucial. The city still owned the property.
Uh-huh.
They had ultimate control over it. Second, the fact that the space was for public use, that was key. It wasn't some abandoned warehouse. This was a place for public gatherings and entertainment. And third, as we already talked about, the specific terms of the lease were super important, you know, including those segregated facilities that clearly showed the city's implicit approval and maybe even their active facilitation of those discriminatory practices. So even if one of these factors was missing, you know, let's say the city had actually sold the building years ago, the outcome could have been very different, even if the new private owner chose to segregate.
Wow.
So you see, all three elements had to be there for the court to reach its decision.
Right. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. It wasn't just some neutral, you know, arm's length lease.
Right.
They had these little nods to segregation baked right in.
Yeah.
Now, I remember seeing a quote from Judge Thompson in the materials, and I thought it was a pretty powerful statement.
Yeah. Chief Judge Thompson, his statement really captures the essence of this ruling, I think. He said, and I quote, "A lease that facilitates segregation is state action." Boom. Right. I mean, that's a really powerful way of saying that the government, they can't just use a lease agreement as a way to get around their responsibility to allow discrimination to happen.
It's a big takeaway for our listeners, for sure. So just to be crystal clear here, if the city had sold the Opera House outright to, say, Marva Theaters, that would have been a totally different legal situation.
Exactly. The court specifically said that selling off surplus property in good faith, that would remove that direct state involvement. And in that scenario, whatever the private owner did, it wouldn't be considered state action. But that's not what happened here.
Right.
The city held onto the property, they leased out a public space, and those lease terms, they acknowledged segregation. So they were still on the hook constitutionally. It's a really, really important distinction.
Okay. Got it. And what was the final outcome? What did the court order?
They issued what's called an injunction,
okay,
which is basically a court order to make someone stop doing something. In this case, it was to stop the segregation. So they banned segregation at the City Opera House. They said, "Marva Theaters, your discriminatory practices under this lease are unconstitutional. You have to stop immediately."
Wow. Okay, so this was a real victory.
Oh, yeah.
This wasn't just symbolic.
No.
This had some teeth to it.
Yeah, yeah. This is a real change.
So why is this case still relevant today? I mean, what's its lasting significance in, you know, the world of civil rights law?
Well, I think this case gives us a blueprint for how to challenge discrimination when it's happening through these public-private partnerships.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's something that our listeners will definitely encounter in their legal careers.
Right.
I mean, think about it. Today, we have stadiums that are built with public funds, but they're run by private companies.
Sure.
We have concessions in public parks that are privately operated. We even have charter schools that are operating in publicly owned buildings.
Yeah, yeah.
So Jones versus Marva Theaters reminds us that governments can't just pass off their constitutional duties to someone else. They can't get around the 14th Amendment by using these partnerships. And that's as true today as it was back in 1960.
Yeah. So even if a private company is, like, calling the shots, if it's happening on public land or using public resources, those 14th Amendment principles, they still apply.
Absolutely. You can't escape them.
And I love this quote from Judge Thompson. He said, "Equal access is a right, not a privilege." I mean, that's powerful.
It is.
And this case really drives that point home, especially when we're talking about public facilities, right? Places that are supposed to serve the whole community.
Exactly. Public spaces should be for everyone.
Okay. So just to wrap things up, What are the key takeaways, the main points that you want to leave our listeners with? Like, what are the absolute must-knows about Jones versus Marva Theaters?
All right. So First and foremost, leasing public property to a private company doesn't automatically let the government off the hook when it comes to preventing discrimination. That's number one. Number two, the court highlighted specific factors in this case that pointed to state action. The government still owned the Opera House. The Opera House was a public space, not some unused piece of land. And the lease terms, they actually had language that supported segregation.
Right.
And lastly, remember Judge Thompson's words, a lease that facilitates segregation is state action. And he also said that equal access to public facilities is a right, not a privilege. That's a really important message. You know, this case tells us that governments can't just use public-private partnerships as a loophole to violate the Constitution. Whether we're talking about stadiums, parks, even schools, it doesn't matter.
That's a really, really clear summary of a really important case.
Thanks.
And I think it really highlights the ongoing challenges that we face, you know, balancing private operations with public responsibility. It's an ongoing tension.
For sure.
And on that note, here's a final thought for our listeners to chew on. Think about the public-private partnerships that exist in your own community. How do the principles from Jones versus Marva Theaters apply today? You know, are they being used to ensure equal access, to prevent discrimination? As these types of partnerships become more and more common, it's something we really need to pay attention to.
I think that's a great point to end on. We all have a role to play in ensuring that public spaces are truly public and accessible to everyone. Thanks for having me on the show.
Of course. It's been a pleasure, as always. And to our listeners, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Jones versus Marva Theaters. Catch you next time.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye.